everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Friday Food Fight. My name is Wes Christian, CEO of Food Handler Solutions, and we are joined once again by Bart Christian, nationally recognized school nutrition industry speaker, and an awesome guest for this week. Actually, our first returning guest to the show, so we're really excited to have Lindsay back on, but I'm going to turn it over to Bart and let him introduce our guest for the second time.
Well, thank you, Wes, and it's my awesome honor again to introduce Lindsay Aguiar, the Child Nutrition Director for Tucson Unified School District in Tucson, Arizona. Now, I know that Lindsay, you know, we talked about these things before, but you've got 15 years of experience. Correct me if I'm wrong, but just in the last few months, were named the Child Nutrition Director at TUSD. So congratulations for that. And I know that you have a real passion for child nutrition, but, you know, what is it that keeps you in this business? What is it that keeps you through all the stuff that we've been going through? What is it that has driven that passion as we've had to pivot in a new direction?
I think for me, the passion is just, I mean, as a dietitian, I certainly am very passionate about, providing nutrition to children and helping shape their eating habits for their lifetime. For me, I think that's an essential skill that all children should have the opportunity to be exposed to. So through the federal meal programs in our schools, you know, being able to teach them about nutrition and provide meals that are representative of what, wholesome meals should look like is certainly part of the passion. But then there's also, you know, just with food insecurity and knowing that the work that we do provides meals to children that may not receive meals if it wasn't for the work we do. And then in particular, during these challenging times with COVID-19, just, you know, so many families that have gone through some tumultuous, you know, times and loss of jobs and furloughs and not being able to make ends meet, just, you know, the gratitude that we have received for, you know, continuing to provide these services to our community definitely keeps myself and our staff, you know, that momentum going and the passion going for sure. And I think, you know, just being that we are an integral part of the educational system. So I think I take that very seriously. And I think, you know, this challenging time has definitely brought that to the table for more people to realize. So that's, I guess, a long answer to your question, but I have a lot of areas of passion.
Well, you know, just a couple other things about you that people may not know is that obviously you're very active in the School Nutrition Association on the state level and on the national level. You've been involved in a lot of different things. But one of the cool things is that you are a TUSD alumni, that you went to all 12 years of school at TUSD schools, which I think is very interesting. Wow. that Providence would land you back in the very place that you started. And I think that's a very interesting thing. And you know, and I know that you have two beautiful little girls, and you have a husband who shares a passion that me and Wesley have, because he's a golf pro here in Tucson, one of the top courses in the country, and just interesting little factoid. And I also know that a lot of people don't realize that you are a kind of a go-to person in the Southwest for the USDA. I've seen you quoted in several things where they've called you and asked you about things. And How did you find yourself in that spot?
I think it kind of started just through my involvement with SNAS and attending the LAC conference in DC. I think some of, you know, my networking connections with other directors that are involved in SNAS and at the USDA level, I was approached last year to do an interview with SNA for a piece that they were working on. This was all pre-COVID, like literally weeks before it all started. So through that experience, their public media relations person has continued to reach out to me. And I don't know if it's because I'm willing to do it, and maybe a lot of people aren't comfortable doing interviews or different things, but it's been a great experience. And over the course of, you know, this pandemic, I've done quite a lot of different interviews from a variety of different publications. And it's certainly, for me, that's another piece of the passion is just spreading the word of the important work that we do and the challenges that we've all had to face and pivot and, you know, come out stronger and better. So it's, I love to be able to share our stories.
Amen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and, you know, and so appropriate that we, you know, kind of, you know, transition out, because the title of today's show is actually Turning the Corner. In child nutrition. And I'd love to talk to you a little bit about what you've been able to accomplish at TUSD this year and really how you have pivoted and some of the different things that have been successful for you all. So just kind of, you know, start us off here. What are some things that you have been able, you and your team have been able to do this year that are maybe a little different from what others are doing in the industry?
Sure. I think for us, you know, I know every district's different, but for in our district, we are, I think, one of the more of the minority, in at least in our state, that has not actually opened hybrid. So I think in some ways that's given us a little bit of an advantage because we've continued to kind of operate what we've been doing now for, you know, since March, but we have added some twists to it. So I think, you know, it was starting to get a little stagnant, and then we would have plans to open up and then it would get changed. So what's something that one of my favorite things that we've added, we started in September, is we were running our bus routes like we had been doing, but then our school started obviously remote. I know a challenge for operators, you know, across the country has just been, if you're doing buses or curbside, matching your lunches to the schedules of the remote learning has been very challenging for the accessibility for parents to get to the meal stops or the schools. If you're doing curbside to pick up, not correlating with their actual times that they're off for lunch, for the remote learning, because not everybody has the same schedule. I mean, it's in our district, it was really impossible, to be honest, to set up our lunch times to work with 88 different, you know, locations. So we identified early on that we were definitely losing participation once remote learning started in August, because a lot of parents could not get to our bus stops at the time frame that was designated because their kids were online, they couldn't leave them, or the parents were at work. So what we started doing was offering a weekly drive-through pickup of a week's worth of meals at our central facility. So it's essentially located for us in our district, since we are such a large district, kind of in the middle, has worked well. And we started off doing it later in the afternoon. So we were offering like a 3:30 to 5:30 or 4 to 6. We've kind of played around with the different time frames. We have a registration process to ensure that parents are not picking up at the bus stops and the weekly pickup. So we do have a little kind of attestation that they sign off. This has been very successful for us. And quite honestly, it's way more efficient than the daily bus stops. For us, our buses are only able to physically have the capacity for us to have 2 days worth of food on them. So with the numbers that we do, we're not able to do a week's worth of meals on our buses. So we're running those every day, doing breakfast and lunch, and then snack and supper. But the space capacity has been really problematic for us. So this one time event that we're doing once a week for a 2 to 3 hour window has really, really greatly impacted getting more participation in our current grab and go meal program. And the response from, we really found kind of the niche for the families that really wanted to take advantage of the meal program, but were at work or couldn't leave during the day to go to the bus stop. So they've been very, very grateful to have a later time frame in the day that works for their schedule that they can. And we've set it up super efficient. We utilize our parking lot. We have two of our refrigerated trucks that set up. We partner with our school safety officers and they help us with traffic control. We're doing about 600 cars in a 3 hour window. So we've got it down pretty good without the traffic backing up too much. But we're doing 7 days worth of meals, 5 snacks, 5 suppers all at one time. And so that's been something that's been very successful to just expand our reach
So when you say that you're doing seven meals, so just for clarification, is that what you're planning on doing for the holiday season for you know, giving the kids food over that Christmas break?
Yeah. So we'll run. We're doing it on Wednesday. So we will run ours on Wednesday prior to winter break. That'll roll into the first week of winter break. We're only going to do one other pickup during winter break, just because, you know, our staff, you know, the consensus, we all need a break. They've all been working really hard. But we are going to do one pickup during the winter break to give us another opportunity to provide meals to our families during that 2 week period. So again, I really think the parents also appreciate it, that they only have to come one time. It's a lot more convenient. They get all of the same amount of food that they would normally get. So we're doing the 7 breakfast, 7 lunch. And then when school's in session, we can do the 5 snacks and the 5 suppers as well.
How has this affected participation? I know that you and I have had a conversation about how things have, you know, somewhat improved over the last few weeks as far as participation goes. Do you attribute it to this formula that you've come up with?
Yeah, absolutely. So from the business side, as far as the revenue piece goes, this has basically gotten to us to a point where we've been able to sustain our expenses. Prior to us doing this, we weren't even covering our payroll with our revenue because our numbers were down so much. We've only been serving about 20% of our normal, you know, feeding capacity that we do during a normal school year. So our revenue from reimbursement was down tremendously. So this, you know, doing these weekly pickups definitely addressed a need in our community, but that also really has helped salvage some of our participation numbers and revenue. And as far as operational costs, at least for us, because, you know, we have a warehouse, we have refrigerated trucks. I certainly know that this wouldn't work for a lot of districts that don't have some of the same resources that we do. But the amount of time and labor that this, you know, takes to pull off in return for what we gain with the participation at one time doing the week's worth is for us a much more efficient process than the numbers that we get on our bus stops.
And you may have said this, or you may have mentioned this earlier, but is this just one meal a day, 2 meals, 3 meals that you're doing?
So our buses do every day breakfast and lunch, and then our weekly pickup that we run just once a week does 7 breakfast, 7 lunch, 5 snack, and 5 suppers all at one time. Wow. So, you know, we give out 1.5 gallons of milk because that covers, you know, all of the milk for all of the various weeks worth that we're doing. This also really helped us utilize a lot of the foods that we already had in inventory that were a little more challenging to pull off on the bus routes. So we have staff assembling, you know, chicken patties on a bun or bagging up slices of pizza that we had and things. You know, we're cupping up, you know, multiple cups of vegetables in one bag that covers the week. And so we've really been able to tap into some of our inventory that, because on our buses, we were primarily utilizing prepackaged items. But now with this bulk kind of assembly, we've been able to utilize a lot of our inventory that had just been stagnant because we didn't have the numbers that we had and the type of foods that we needed on our buses. This is different. It gives us a lot more flexibility, and it's worked well with assembly teams and all of that to pull this off.
And speaking of staff, how has your staff retention been? And ultimately, how are you handling the staffing and labor costs for this year?
So we have been fortunate that we've, you know, been able to sustain our current staffing levels as far as, you know, our district, has not opted to, you know, at this point, you know, consider any type of furloughs or layoffs or anything like that, which is great. You know, we have We've had some staff that have decided, you know, to retire a little early or resign just because, you know, of everything going on. But for the most part, you know, the majority of our staff is still committed to the work that they do. And they've been, you know, so flexible in, you know, all of the shifts that we've had to make, you know, from one week, it's like, okay, you're preparing for kids to come back. We need, you know, here's the plan. This is what you need to do. And then 2 days later, we need to, or, you know, we're not going back. We need to shift back to the buses and these pickups. So our staff has just been so flexible and, you know, basically, and I think a lot of them are, you know, truly just grateful that they, you know, have a job and we're able to continue to do what we do, although it looks very different and we're serving frozen food, which I know is so weird to them. And, you know, not being able to cook food, but we've been fortunate to, you know, continue kind of where we've been at to date and not have to make any major changes. So I'm grateful for that for sure.
Yeah. And you kind of briefly mentioned this a second ago, but when we're talking about the items that you're actually serving, you mentioned that it's, you know, been successful being able to get some of those items that were a little more difficult to kind of mix into the rotation before off of the shelves. What does menu planning actually look like for you this school year? And what types of items are you finding to be successful?
Yeah, so menu planning has, you know, it's definitely been, you know, quite a ride as far as we have multiple different menus. So we have our on-site menus for our students that are on-site, the at-risk students. So we do have very small amounts of students on our campuses, McKinney-Vento or foster students, refugees. So we are still feeding those students every day. Then we have our bus menu, which we're primarily using prepackaged items. Although we're starting to incorporate some of the items that we're packaging in-house on the bus routes. I think now that the pandemic has gone on for quite some time, initially we were, for safety protocols, only using prepackaged items. But, you know, over the course of the last couple months, we started to introduce items that we're putting in bags or containers with our safety protocols, you know, for staff following. And we've, you know, it's been very well received. We haven't had concerns with that. But I think it was just a matter, we needed to get through some time for our community and families to be open and receptive to that versus seeing something that's already commercially sealed. So we have our bus menu, and then we have our weekly pickup menu that incorporates different items. So we have, you know, depending on how we're serving it, whether it's on a bus or a drive-through where we're doing bulk or on site where they're actually cooking food, we've been building our menus to correlate appropriately with our needs for service. That's the biggest driving factor. It's what are you putting it in? How are you serving it? Is it hot food? Is it cold food? And then efficiently, how are you, you know, bagging everything? So we've got quite a system down, and how many bags can we fit in our crates and all? I mean, it's all in numbers and down to the T, and we've got a very organized system and color coding different palettes. And but our team has done an outstanding job of keeping it all organized and, you know, assigning everybody their different roles. And we lost our electricity. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Well, we can still see you.
Okay. And I can probably lighten you up here. So, but it sounds like you're using kind of a combination of individually wrapped items as well as items that your team is prepping and wrapping themselves.
And for us, being able to assemble the items that aren't prepackaged, for us, that's been another opportunity that we can utilize our current staffing. So because our numbers are so low at our school sites, and then we only need so many staff on our buses every day, we have a pool of employees that we, have available to work and need to work. And this has been a way that we can utilize those, you know, staffing hours to assemble things that we already had in inventory or that are less expensive than the prepackaged items that we can go ahead and package ourselves.
Are you finding yourself being able to, how are commodities being used now? And I know I was on a SNA patron meeting not too very long ago with vendors, and that was one of the things they were talking about was, you know, commodities and things that are on the verge of expiration. that some of the vendors have on hand. How are you? Are you finding it difficult to use commodities, or is that beginning to work?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a lot of, you know, challenges in the commodity because our allocations were done obviously prior to this pandemic when we had our menu plans, you know, January, February last year for this year, and then the pandemic hit. So we certainly are not menuing a lot of the items that we had planned with our commodity allocations because, you know, we're not cooking, preparing food on site, or we're doing the bulk. So we have been able to utilize some of our commodities, but the biggest challenge too is that our current numbers are down so much that our usage is nowhere near what we had allocated. And I know this is, you know, a huge concern that everybody's dealing with because it's not moving, the poundage. We're getting the notifications that, you know, we've got 200,000 pounds of beef that we haven't utilized because we're not making meat sauce right now because we're not, you know, preparing foods. We're sending frozen items that families can easily, you know, heat up at home. So I think, and this is, I think, a piece that I was just on a call earlier today with some other directors in our state that we were talking about, just, you know, the training aspect of now, we more than ever, we really need to get creative with our menus and how can we incorporate some items that maybe we hadn't thought about that we could incorporate to, you know, to help utilize some commodities and other U.S. foods that are available that just aren't moving because, you know, it's not what operators are looking for. So we definitely have shifted to more non-prepackaged items again because we have our centralized warehouse. We have a lot of items that we're still you know, sitting on from last spring that we need to move out. So we're definitely trying to get creative, but it's challenging. I mean, and how far can you go, right?
Right.
Is it appropriate to send just a bag of meatballs, like, to our families? And do you send the sauce separate, or can, you know, and we're not equipped to do, you know, vacuum seal type of stuff. Right. So, you know, we could make a lot work, but we also still have that integrity of quality and perception that we have to deal with, you know, from our customers and our families. So
how about containers? I know that as these, you know, one of the things that we talked that kind of was talked about early on was the lack of, you know, plastic bags and containers and things to send, put food in. Have you seen that sort of catch up, that catch up to demand?
Yeah, we definitely have seen, you know, improvements in that area. I think that's, you know, been one of the biggest challenge with planning and menu planning is, you know, we have our plan, but then the truck, you know, doesn't show up, or we get, you know, it's a half a truck instead of a whole truck that we ordered because of there's a supply chain issue for sure that is still very real. So I think, you know, shifting to, you know, okay, we need this bag, but it's, you know, not available. So what do you have? What are the dimensions? Can we make it work? It's definitely been a challenge, but we've been able, fortunately for us, we haven't had anything that has detrimentally, you know, affected our operation or, you know, through a waiver that we needed to put in temporarily to make, you know, to meet the menu pattern or, but I also, again, I think with our having a centralized warehouse, I know is very advantageous, for these, you know, times because we had a lot of containers that we had prepared for to use last quarter and then everything stopped. So we didn't have to start purchasing a lot of our packaging until, you know, September or October-ish because we were still using the inventory that we didn't use last quarter because we weren't serving anywhere near the volume that we normally serve. So I know that, again, that was kind of a unique situation compared to a lot of people that really were having dire challenges just getting something to put their food in.
You know, and we've been talking a lot about all of the different changes that we've made this school year to really continue to serve the food. And I'm just curious, what departments inside of TUSD have you partnered with, leaned on to really make all of these changes possible?
Yeah, I mean, so definitely we couldn't be doing it without our transportation department. So we're, you know, we've been so fortunate to team up with our transportation department, with our bus drivers, that we've been running the grab-and-go meals on our bus route since March and utilizing the bus drivers for that. So our school safety team, our school safety department has been another key partner in doing traffic control at some of our bus, larger bus stops, and also at our weekly pickups to control, you know, the cars driving through. And then, you know, I will say our district leadership team has, you know, just, I've been very, very impressed with the process that our superintendent has led during this entire time and bringing all the departments together consistently and, you know, planning and connecting, you know, this is the hybrid schedule. Lindsay, how is this going to correlate with your breakfast and lunch service when we do open hybrid? You know, what can you do? Did the kids, you know, I've been involved in all of the conversations. So I feel very fortunate because I know that's not always the case for a lot of child nutrition operators. You often feel like you're the stepchild or the silo and the afterthought. So, but I also think, you know, I think I said this the last time, you know, I have no issues kind of like inserting myself if I have to be, you know, brought to the table or part of the conversation, or if I hear something, you know, just being proactive. So I really think that at least in our district, I will say it's been really amazing to see how well the communication has happened. And, you know, we've developed a COVID website and all the resources and materials and questions for all the departments and, you know, working with, you know, our family resource centers to help get the word out to families that we have these opportunities for free meals. And the principals have been marketing, you know, the marquee drive around Tucson, you see on their marquee, you know, grab and go free meals, 10:45, you know, they have their bus stop times on the marquees. And so I feel very fortunate that I've had a very positive experience, at least with working with other areas that normally I don't get the opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm. And Go ahead, Bart.
I think what we're going to see after this is all over with Lindsay in a lot of districts, where there was animosity or adversarial relationships between different departments, I think we're all, you know, this is such a cliche, but we're all in this together. And I think this has really opened people's eyes to that very thing, that we all need each other.
Yeah, absolutely. That's for sure.
Yeah. And Lindsay, you mentioned resources a second ago, and I'm just curious, what type of resources are you utilizing for, you know, ongoing training opportunities for your staff?
So we are still using our school food handler as our number one, you know, training resource for our staff, which I will say it's, you know, the additional new trainings that have been available for COVID and, you know, just that's been just such a relief to know that that's there. And we have so many other things that we've had to focus on. That's, you know, been our main, you know, training piece for our staff. They continue to do multiple, you know, trainings each month to fulfill their requirements. And then we have, you know, received some additional resources from our, you know, our county health department that, you know, we've shared, and they're, you know, going out and doing some, the site reviews obviously are much different right now than normal because a lot of our kitchens aren't serving meals, or if they are, it's very minimal. So they're doing some on-site assessments where it's not a, you know, a punitive review, but they're doing additional training with our employees over, you know, COVID-19 and different requirements that our county has, which I think has been nice just to, you know, kind of reinforce some of the extra, you know, requirements that we currently have to have right now. And then our district has done some, you know, training resources available, you know, to all district staff. But I would say, at least for the food service staff, the school food handler definitely has been our biggest resource for our staff training.
Mm-hmm. As far as your staff is concerned, during these times, you had mentioned earlier in this show that, you know, some people have chosen to retire. Maybe some people don't feel comfortable coming to work. What type of work from home opportunities are you offering during these times?
So when we, when our school year started, the new contract year for our staff in depending on what type of employee they are, 10 month or 12 month, at the end of July, beginning of August, our district identified essential employees, which means those that were required to work on site and not work remotely. So food service staff was one of the identified essential employees. As far as a cafeteria worker, you know, can't prepare food from home, or a bus driver can't drive a bus from home. So we were able to be flexible in the spring under the governor order, but that shifted when we started our new contract year. So our food service staff have been working on site since the new school year has started.
Now, for those employees that are on site, if there were to be a COVID outbreak, or not maybe a COVID outbreak, but just a confirmed COVID case, how are situations like that handled?
So we have a district protocol that's in line with and updated as needed with the Pima County Health Department and the CDC. So I think our district's done a great job of, you know, it's literally a chart. It's pretty cut and dry. It gives you the different scenarios. If you've tested positive, if you've been exposed, if you're asymptomatic, if you live in a household with someone. So we have, you know, our protocols in place, you know, with isolating for 10 days or quarantining for 14 days, depending on the scenario. So we also have a system in place with our county health department where all cases get reported through an online system. And then we also have our health services department that's tracking all of this in working with the Pima County Health Department. So as soon as we get a positive case, I report that to the county, fill out the information online, same thing with our health services. And then we identify any close contacts, which is the 15 minutes, less than 6 feet apart for more than 15 minutes in a 24-hour period, then those any close contacts I would then need to send home to isolate. You know, that's been in place this whole time. And I feel like, you know, we were fortunate, I think, for the, you know, most of this time. I will say we've definitely seen the spike in since November, and now with the amount of staff that we have seen, you know, test positive or a household member, those type of scenarios. So, you know, we're just implementing our protocols and working with our local county health department on the contact tracing.
What kind of effect is that having on, now I've talked to several directors about how they're handling sick time, handling FMLA type leave, you know, how is that having that quarantine time? Is it count into that time, or what are y'all doing in the district when that happens with someone?
Yeah, so we have our district through the Families First, that Coronavirus Act. So we have all of our district staff has that emergency paid sick leave time that is available to them to utilize for the various scenarios, whether they have to care for a child who can't be at school, or they're in isolation, or they have COVID, or a member of their household. There's different qualifying factors, and then they can utilize that time. And then, of course, you know, their sick time or whatever other balances they might have available. So our district has made that process, I feel, pretty simple and easy. It's just an online form that you fill out as soon as you might qualify for one of the scenarios, that you can utilize those sick hours that are provided to us for those exact scenario. And then we do have, you know, our normal leave of absence criteria, or you know, medical leaves all apply as well. So we have, you know, some employees that have chosen to take an LOA or a medical leave or whatever their situation is. So there's some different options available to our staff.
Well, in the last couple of closing minutes, Lindsay, first off, thank you so much for being on the show again. We really appreciate your time and the insight that you've provided to us. Is there anything you'd like to close our viewers with for this episode?
I mean, I would just want to thank everybody, and, you know, in the industry and child nutrition, and, you know, from manufacturers, vendors, operators, staff. I mean, we're all, like you said, Bart, we are all in this together, even if we're in different, you know, parts of the country or the state. And I think, you know, as the longer this goes on, I think, you know, we've all learned so much, and I think are each day a little bit better prepared for the whirlwind that I think we're still gonna be in. But I think the only thing I would say is I've been trying, you know, a lot to just, you know, how can I best prepare now that we, you know, because our whole world for the last 9 months has been so, you know, vulnerable and just shifting at the, you know, phone call that comes in at 7 o'clock at night, like, oh, this is happening tomorrow. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, how am I going to pull this off? Or so I think, you know, just trying to, for me, I've really just tried to come up with, you know, some, what are my backup plans? What if this happens, that happens, kind of now knowing some of the unknowns that we didn't know before, what I've learned, you know, how can we have a little bit more, emergency preparedness, I guess you would call it, for various scenarios that we might still be faced with as, you know, we continue down this journey. So I think, but I just encourage everybody, you know, stay positive. I think I've definitely seen more recently just a lot of people, you know, in my world and that I interact with, it's like you're starting to feel that COVID effect again of, you know, this is all happening again, and it's surging and it's affecting everybody's life again, and just trying to step back and, you know, look at all the things that we have so much to be grateful for and thankful for, and going into the holidays and staying safe and, you know, appreciate what everybody does for sure.
Well, I just will say this. I feel like the city of Tucson is so blessed to have somebody like you at the helm of the Child Nutrition Department, because I know your heart and I know your passion, and I know you care so deeply. And so, you know, I'm going to close with this. God bless you, Lindsay. God bless your group and all the great work they do. And, you know, God bless these child nutrition superheroes everywhere.
Yes. Thank you.
Well said. Well, again, thank you so much to both of you for being on the show for this week. We appreciate your time. And for everyone out there watching, this has been another episode of Friday Food Fight. We look forward to seeing you again next week at 12 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Take care and have an awesome weekend.